Thank you. this is joint work with John Keating and Chris Hughes. And the first few minutes of my talk are identical to Mike Rubenstein's. So we should have consulted. But I guess it doesn't hurt to tell the same story over again. The Keating-Snaith model for characteristic polynomial model for the zeta function grew out of an attempt to conjecture the high moments of the zeta function on the critical line. And so the moments, I mean, I'll call I sub k of t, and we'll go, say, from t to 2t. Okay, so that'll be my notation. And so I should tell you something about what these are good for. Well, the moments, if you get bounds on the moments, you've heard from Peter and other people, if you get bounds, that tells you something about zeta. And from that, you can deduce information about primes and other arithmetical objects. So that's a quick summary of why we're interested in them. Okay, so what do we know about these things? Well, this is the part that's like Mike's, which I guess is a good thing. I didn't change it. Hardy and Littlewood got the asymptotic for the second moment, I1, and in 1918. And then Ingham, in 1926, proved an asymptotic for the fourth moment, which is I2. But no moment higher than that is known asymptotically. So what do we think is the case? Well, let's see. One bit of evidence we have is that we know that a lower bound for the kth moment of the form t log k squared t, and that's true for rational positive k. And if the Riemann hypothesis is true, it's true for irrational positive k as well. And that's due to combined efforts of a number of people, Balasubramanian, Ramachandra, Roger Heath-Brown, and others too. So that lower order estimate is what we really expect is the truth. We think that I sub k of t is asymptotic to some constant times t log k squared t. Brian Connery and Omid Ghosh suggested the structure of the constant. They suggested it's an arithmetical factor, ak, that you see written there, times an integer gk over the gamma function at k squared plus 1. If you use that kind of language, then these numbers GK in the case of 1 and 2, so that's the Hardy-Littlewood and then Ingham result, correspond to 1 and 2. Then in the mid-90s, Brian Connery and Omid Ghosh gave a six-moment conjecture, and the GK there, G3, is 42. And then later, Brian and I gave an eighth-moment conjecture, and the G4 comes out 24,024. Okay. It's confusing using two projectors. Okay. All of these moments. Let's put that back. All of these moment conjectures and estimates come from approximating the zeta function by a Dirichlet series and then computing some mean value. when the eighth moment was announced, Keating and Snaith announced their conjecture for all the moments. And it was a fortunate thing. They used random matrix theory, so that was entirely different from all the previous methods. And it was a fortunate thing that that G4 came out to be the same in both cases. And I think that was very good for the subject. So let me now go to the blackboard and tell you, I want to give you my take, my interpretation of the Keating-Snaith model as preparation for what we're going to do with the new model. So let's assume RH, and let's suppose that T is large, let's say between capital T and 2T, and the zeta function is analytic if you're not near 1, and we won't be. And so it should be well approximable by a polynomial having the same zeros as the zeta function. If I take that polynomial, I'm not going to say what it means to be well approximable, but you can come up with some notion easily. If you restrict to the half line, then what we're saying is that if I take the product over pieces that look like this, all right, so these are, so on the half line, these factors vanish at each ordinate of a zero. And let's say we'll take, we don't know how many zeros to take, we'll take an interval of length 1 around T. So then if T minus gamma N is small, you could argue that from the identity, well, not the identity, the approximation, if X is small, IX is about 1 minus E to the minus IX. So you could rewrite this as roughly product over the same zeros of 1 minus E to the I gamma N minus T. Okay, and you do that so that you get things in the shape of the characteristic polynomial of a random matrix from the CUE. Now, it's believed that the gamma N's locally have the same kind of statistics as eigenangles of random matrices from CUE, the circular unitary ensemble. So it makes sense to try to model this factor by one of these characteristic polynomials, like so. Now you have to say what n is. Let's call this zn u theta. U will be the matrix we're taking. The eigenangles, the eigenvalues are all unimodular. So you can write the characteristic polynomial like this. And what should n be? Well, their idea was that the spacing of the zeros should be, the average spacing should be the average spacing here. So 2 pi over n should be, well, there's spacing there is 2 pi over log t. So that suggests n should be about log t. Okay. Then they assume that averaging moments of this, averaging powers of this, is like averaging powers of this over CUE, over the unitary group. So they did the calculation of the expected value of Zn u theta to the 2k. And this came out, this well-known answer, n to the k square. And then they noticed that these numbers gn, well, those numbers are actually equal to these little gks in the cases known. divided by the gamma function. Okay, this was, at the time, it was the case k equals 1, 2, and 3, and then shortly after, 4. So they conjectured that for all real k, bigger, all k whose real parts are bigger than minus a half, the same should be true. That is, you now know what the GKs are. Okay, well, this model has been used to calculate the moments of other L functions, as you've heard all week and in Mike Rubenstein's talk. And those moments have been used to conjecture the answers to some very deep number theoretical problems. One drawback of the model, though, is that there's no arithmetic in it. The primes never appear. So what I want to describe is joint work with, as I said, with Chris and John Keating to give a model that has primes in it. So the beginning, the starting point, is going to be a familiar explicit formula. Zeta prime over zeta is equal to minus the sum n less than or equal to x of lambda of n over n to the s plus sum over the zeros of the zeta function x to the minus w minus rho over w minus rho. A similar sum for the trivial zeros. And then one more term for the pole at 1.
Should she have w in the first sum over n?
Yeah, thank you. Over log n? No, over n to the w. Thanks. Over w minus 1. Okay, so what we do in the paper is not actually use this formula. We have to smooth. So we need a more complicated form. But what I'm going to do, like integrate term-wise and so on, is not justifiable from this formula. But I wanted to keep things as simple as possible so you'd get the idea. Okay, so we integrate this from infinity to S. S will be some point in the critical strip. And we integrate along a horizontal line. And the first term on the left becomes log zeta. And then you get a term n less than or equal to x, lambda of n over n to the s log n. And now you get some strange terms. So what are these? Well, I'm just going to do one. They're all of the same form. So let me show you what they look like. We're integrating from infinity to S. Typical term is x to the minus w minus rho over w minus rho dw. This is if I set z equal to w minus rho times log x. This is an integral of e to the minus z over z dz. And at an, I'm going to switch the limit, so I'll introduce minus. So infinity goes up here now, and then I have s minus rho log x. Now, in the correct form of the beginning explicit formula, this will be a little more complicated, but it's essentially like this. And this is well known. This has a name. This is the exponential integral, or the first exponential integral. Okay. So these other terms look like this. The sum over the non-trivial zeros are e1 s minus rho log x. And then terms for the trivial zeros and the pole. Now, you can estimate those They're relatively small. If you just use, you know, estimates for E1, and what you'll find is if, let's say we go to a large height, so I can state it more simply, a large height T, you'll get some small, genuinely small error term. So if X is big, at least going to infinity with T, and you're up near height T, the error term is completely irrelevant for anything you want to do practically. Okay, so let me show you almost what the theorem says. I'm not going to put in the weights. Let's see. We're going to exponentiate that formula to get log zeta, and then this is, I don't need to exclude any of these points, the zeros or the pole. When you exponentiate, then you get a product. The first part is a product over primes, and the second one is a product over zeros. And I'm going to call that P sub x times Z sub x for primes and zeros, respectively. Okay. So what does this thing look like, really? This exponential is a little peculiar. Well, it turns out that it's not hard to show that E1 of z is minus log e to the gamma z minus some power series. Looks like that. And there's a branch cut along the negative axis and so on. So for z small, this is looking like minus log e to the gamma z. And then if z is large, this has an asymptotic expansion that begins like this. Okay. So what I want to do now is just put in for E1 these, like the leading terms from these. Now, using this, you can truncate the product over zeros so that you're staying near T. Now, you can't truncate it as close as we'd like to, but you can argue that the terms that are sort of in an intermediate range between close to T, whatever that means, and far from T, kind of wash out, because it turns out on the half line they're oscillating and decreasing in magnitude. So zeta of S will be approximately this Euler product times product over zeros. I'm going to cut this off so that the zeros that I take are within 1 over log x from S. And then let's use this for the size of E1. That gives, there's a minus there, so this is log of e to the gamma log x S minus rho n. And what I've written here is just, well, so this is This is just e to gamma. This is Euler's constant, log x s minus rho n. And this is the heuristic formula. Okay, so there's a theorem. And then if you want to simplify it, throw away terms that should be oscillating, and just get a local form, this is what you're led to, something like this. Okay, so let me emphasize that we're out of proof land and we're in conjecture land, as Chris likes to say. Okay. All right, so this, you can see, is a hybrid between an Euler product and a Hadamard product. And let me just point out that the first factor, if you just roughly, crudely approximate, kind of looks like this, just so you get a sense what it is. Okay, so finite Euler product. Okay. Now, let me just do one more thing with this. Let's use this, let's see. Let's use the approximation I had before. Let's assume RH now. And that sigma is a half. All right. So this product over zeros looks like product gamma n minus t is less and less than 1 over log x times I t minus gamma n e to the gamma log x. Okay. Now let's play the same game I did before, where I used the fact that ix, if x is small, is about 1 minus e to the minus ix. Okay. Then that allows me to take this piece that looks like a Hadamard product and write it in a form where modeling by random matrices from CUE is sensible. So as the model of zeta, we're going to take E, the sum n less than or equal to x, lambda of n to the half plus it log n times the product of gamma n minus t less than one over log x times 1 minus e to the I e to the gamma log x gamma n minus t. Okay. Okay. Now, of course, what we're going to want to do when we apply this is model the part over the product over zeros by random matrix theory. Okay, so let me show you how the moment calculation goes. The moment calculation that Keating and Snaith did. So what we have is that the zeta function on the half-line, I'm going to assume RH and stay on the half-line, the zeta function is equal to this product over primes times product over zeros. Now, that's exact from the theorem. This Z here is not the heuristic one I've been sort of putting this in the form of. Okay, now... that means if we want to compute the 2kth moment of zeta, it's the 2kth moment of p times z. Okay, now, we can hope to do a 2kth moment of a short Euler product, but the only handle we have on moments of Z is random matrix theory. So we've got T, we've got Haar measure of CUE. We have to assume something to proceed, and that we call the splitting conjecture. Okay. Now there's actually evidence for this. Okay. I'll say a little more about it later. Okay. Not as good as the Saturday night conjecture. Okay. All right. So once you assume splitting, we can actually prove the 2kth moment of this almost Euler product polynomial. Piece of x. Okay. So this is a theorem. This assumes nothing. And now the problem is, what do you do with z? Let's see. Okay. Let's take Z in that form over there. So this looks like the characteristic polynomial modified slightly. That is, it's multiplied by some factor that shouldn't be there for some random matrix. So what we're going to do is think of that as roughly the characteristic polynomial. I keep saying characteristic polynomial, but it would be characteristic polynomial if I stop there, but I've got this factor e to the gamma log x. Okay, now I'm going to think of these theta n's multiplied by this factor as my new eigenangles. So let's call phi n theta n times e to the gamma log x. All right, and I haven't said what n is. So let's work that out. First, let me rewrite this so it looks more friendly. Okay, so that's what we're going to use to model that. Okay, so what should n be? Well, we'll play the same game of setting average distances between zeros and eigenangles equal. The numbers here are 2 pi over log t apart times e to the gamma log x. That's the average spacing. Okay. The phi n's are 2 pi over n apart. All right. So for n, we're going to take the greatest integer in log t over e to the gamma log x. All right. So now we assume that the 2kth moment over the n by n unitary matrices here is the same as our actual z factor, our product over zeros. So that's conjecture. So that's equivalent to the sort of thing that John and Nina did. All right? That's on the same level. Okay. Now, so we have splitting, and then we have the two pieces worked out. So let's put them all together. And miraculously, the e to the gamma log x piece cancels out exactly. And so you get as a leading term for I sub k exactly the Keating-Snaith conjecture. So we get it back. This time the primes are there, though, at the beginning. I mean at the end. Beginning and end. Okay. Now, what's the evidence for splitting? Well, one piece of evidence, I think, is the suggested form of CK that Brian and Omid Ghosh came up with. The fact that it splits into GK and then AK over the gamma function kind of suggests splitting. But also, if we take the zeta function and multiply by the inverse of our Euler finite Euler product and compute the mean square, now this calculation is essentially done. It's morally done. It's just not completely done. But you get this. Okay. All right, so that's the mean square of z sub x. And we know what the mean square of p is. And then if you put them together, if you multiply the two together, you get exactly what I1 is. Right? So that suggests, so that's, I guess, our best evidence for splitting so far. Okay, and that means that the splitting conjecture and also the conjecture that the moments, well, can't find the slide, but the conjecture that moments of Z, the zero part, are given by moments of the random matrix, the appropriate random matrix, that's correct too in the case k equals 1. Okay, now I want to describe some other work with David Farmer and Chris Hughes. So zeta, what is the order? What can you say about the order of the zeta function on the half-line? Well, if we use this representation, the sum here can be estimated. You can get an upper bound easily by the prime number theorem. And that gives that's easily seen to be e to the big O of root x over log x. Okay. Now, what about
between x and p?
Sorry?
What's the relation between x and t?
Sorry.
What's the relation between x and t?
X can be, I'm going to take x to be about log t here, but X can actually be, you know, pretty widely ranging. Can be big if you want. But here we want it small for the moment. Okay? So you can think of it as log T. Okay. All right, so what's the size? Now, what's the size of the characteristic polynomial expression that we think should model that? Okay. Well, if F sub n is the probability that the maximum over theta around the circle of a characteristic polynomial is less than or equal to e to the n to the lambda, then if you select a bunch of these independently, random matrices independently, then the probability that in your group you find something that's less than or equal to e to the n to the lambda is f to the mth power if you make m choices. Okay? That's using independence. And then you can show, this was in Chris Hughes' thesis, you can actually get a nice expression for Fn. And then you just have to figure out what you're going to take for M. How many choices are you going to make? So the reasoning is, let's say we're up between capital T and capital 2T. The number of zeros in a range like that is T log T, roughly.
Can you put that slide back up?
Coming over,
yeah,
over there maybe?
Oh, okay. Let's... Here, put that one there. Okay, the number of zeros from t to 2t is about t log t. And so each, you want to at least get that many zeros represented in your sampling. And is the size of the matrix, so there are n eigenvalues. So you want the number of matrices times n to be t log t, roughly. Now, you might argue that you want to sample more. But if you take m larger, say you take t log t to a power, that's fine too. The results here are not going to change. Okay, so you figure out what m is, and then... it turns out that if you find the smallest lambda, well, if you work out what the smallest lambda is for that m, for which the probability tends to 1, then it comes out that n to the lambda is exponential of a half plus epsilon square root of n log x log n. Okay, and if you take the epsilon positive, it goes to 1. If you take it negative, it definitely doesn't. Okay, now n, the n here is log t over log x. It was really, well, it. I haven't, the slide isn't quite consistent. In this situation, I'm going to take log t over log x. The e to the gamma isn't going to matter because if there was an e to the gamma there, there'd be an extra factor in front of the log x. So anyway, the n log x is log t. And so you get something that's root log t times a half as the suggested probability. And notice it doesn't depend on x except that here log x over log t has to go to 0 with t. Okay. So now if you put that in here, remember zeta is this piece times this piece. The prime part was this. Product, we think, can get as big as this and no bigger. Root log t log log t. Now, if we take x to be log t, then this is root log t over log log, so it's definitely of lower order than this. And this is a legitimate choice. And so you get, as a conjecture, that the maximum of zeta on an interval from t to 2t might be this. Right? So that's what's suggested by this kind of heuristic argument. Let's see.
What, that's one of the five methods that lead to this that we heard about.
Yes, there is either
the same track.
There's four, five, or six. Let me mention a recent development as of yesterday. Sound and Andrew Granville were looking at this, and they had a very nice idea. They said, well, if that's the true order here, you've taken x to be rather small. All right. When you take x small, you're not using many primes, you're using a lot of zeros. What if you take x to be large, so that you're using very few zeros and lots of primes? All right. And if you take x to be e to the square root of log t, all right, now that's not covered exactly in that slide there, but it turns out you get the same answer, even though the log x over log t is violated in that case. then this is order root x, e to the root log t. So it's definitely lower than the maximal order here. So if you're sitting at a t where this achieves the maximum, it must be given by the primes. So they went off and did a modeling of the primes using classical things. So no random matrix theory here. And their model suggested exactly the same thing. Okay, I'll stop.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? So the splitting means that the two things that you factored it into are independent statistically?
Yeah, at least to first order.
Right. That's one input. The other input in at least this argument, and I still haven't understood this point, is that when you go from t to t plus 1, at least the argument, that those unitary matrices are getting independent of each other.
When they actually involve gammas, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's an assumption, right?
Have you tried to do this for the L function of an elliptic curve? Because in that case, the product of the primes would be related to the rank.
Right.
We know that independently, and then by random matrix theory, you might do the product of the zero and get a new attack on rank.
we plan to carry out the same thing for different L functions. So definitely do that.
Mm-hmm. I thought Brian doesn't have this other. Have you been pummeled into submission?
Not completely.
Very quiet today.
Well,
I don't know what this Sound and Granville argument is.
Well, we just model n to the it.
So you're just saying you can make only...
We take p to the it's and assume they're randomly distributed on the unit circle, and then create n to the it out of the p to the it's.
This is just Montgomery's.
Certainly that was in that direction.
So it's obviously...
So you're saying just use this and take x is log squared, but you only make the first log.
E to the root log t.
Very, very big.
Oh, x is e to the root log t.
Yeah. then there's this is 1 over root log t, and the number of zeros is log t over something. So you're getting something here that's no bigger than root. E to the root log t.
And the The point is that formula suggests a truncation at e to the root log t, that you couldn't have guessed that before.
Further questions? Okay.
I have a remark.
Any questions or remarks?
I spent a lot of my time here trying to show that zeta is the larger value. So I was definitely in Brian's camp. And so, in fairness, I want to say that I think it was a bold conjecture, and Brian could still be right.
Okay, let's see.